This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 252. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Buddy goes to a funeral, Stormwatch gets a reset, Scotty's backstory, quipping while fighting, can a fox and a dryad make it work, and classic sci-fi. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, April 7th, 2013. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs. And you can subscribe via iTunes, where you should leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. So we have 2 weeks of comics to cover, and we're starting to see the not WTF fold-out covers at DC. This was just a botched marketing campaign, which seems to be the norm for DC now.
Really? They just can't get any marketing right, can they?
Because in this case, they said, oh, we're going to have WTF month, where you're going to have these fold-out covers and a big surprise. And then a couple days later, they said, oh, we don't like WTF, and it went away. And they still have the covers, but they're not a big secret because they're being released on the net officially in advance by DC.
So there's no point in it.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, let's see what it is. Well, wait, we already saw it, you know?
Right.
That was kind of dumb.
Animal Man number 19 by Lemire and Pugh. Buddy and Ellen are dealing with Cliff's death, and he tries to convince her to let Maxine save him, the idea being that she can reach into the red and somehow save him. Unfortunately, he decides to make this announcement at the funeral, this plea, and she responds by leaving him and taking Maxine with her. Buddy is harassed by paparazzi, and he attacks them, and he decides to return to the red, and he demands an audience with the Parliament of the Red, and wants them to pick a new avatar and leave him and Maxine out of it. And they respond very angrily by taking away his connection to the Red, although he still has his powers.
So what is the significance of taking away his connection to the Red?
You can get away from all the mystic red versus green versus rot, and maybe that's what the new writer wants to do.
Well, I can see from the writer's point. From Buddy's point, I can think that it's only a good thing, you know?
You would think so.
He doesn't have to deal with that himself.
Right.
So I'm not sure that this was the punishment that the Red intended it to be.
But Maxine's still involved.
Yes, she still has the cat.
Right.
I like the cat.
Stormwatch number 19 by Starlin and Goucher. So Jim Starlin decided to reset things in the title, literally. And this happens a lot when a new writer comes in. He wants to reset things to some extent, but in this case, he actually did it within the storyline. The Shadow Lords reach back to the beginning of time and stop the current Stormwatch team from happening. And so everything in issues 1 to 18 can now officially be ignored.
See, this is just silly.
So the new team, there's a new engineer, a new Apollo, and a new Midnighter. There's Hellstrike, a character from Wildstorm, another character. The Weird, now this is a Jim Starlin created character whose first appearance was in his own title in 1988. And I know because I have that miniseries. And he made various appearances in the Starlin miniseries in the 2000s, the Rand Thanagar War. And
yeah, he was in that one with Captain
Comet.
Comet,
right.
Yes.
There's also Jenny Soul, Force, and the Forecaster, who I think are all new characters. And then in the last panel, there's Lobo. Now, it's unclear whether they're to stop Lobo or Lobo's going to join the team. And I think this is the first appearance of Lobo in the New 52.
I'm not sure. I don't remember.
I'm not sure, but I think it is. Star Trek number 19 from IDW by Johnson and Balboni. So these one-shot origins continue as they vamp waiting for the movie to come out. And this time it's Scotty. As before, he was from a long line of engineers. He is too outspoken on his Starfleet admission interview to basically say, you know, we have to take risk. We have to try these things. Otherwise, we just sitting behind desk, which is what the guy who's interviewing him is doing, is sitting behind a desk.
Yes.
So he doesn't get into Starfleet, and he ends up working on freighters. But he helps out a Starfleet vessel, and the captain puts in a good word for him back at Starfleet. So he ends up in the Academy. As an experiment, he beams an admiral's dog to Mars, because everyone says, well, that's not possible to beam to another planet. He does it and then kind of gets the dog back. Doesn't go well. And so he ends up being assigned to this remote station where we meet him in the first movie. I am enjoying these origin stories for these characters trying to tie it into the J.J. Abrams continuity.
So I think they still have, what, Chekhov and Sulu?
Right. And I think they can get them both. Yeah, they can get them both in before we hit the movie, because the movie's not till... No, actually, the movie's in May, so...
Ooh, we're coming up on
that. Yeah, it's coming up.
We got to mark that on our calendar.
Angel and Faith, Season 9, Number 20 by Dark Horse by Gage and Isaacs.
Angel and Faith and Spike.
Right. Because Spike has to step in to help Faith save Angel's soul while he's currently holding three souls in his body. And because of that, he's out of it.
Yes.
And the one thing I wanted to say about this issue is there's really great dialogue during the battle between Spike and Faith. I thought it was very Whedon-esque. The idea that they're just kind of quipping at each other while the battle's going on.
I do like this series a lot better, I'm going to say it again, than the current Buffy series, but that's just me.
The Buffy series seems like they don't know where they're going. There doesn't seem to be a direction. Earlier in the series, when the whole thing was going on with, ended up being Twilight, there was a sense that they were moving forward and they had a plan. Right now, it doesn't seem like they do.
Although I think they're wrapping up this season, so maybe some things will come to an end.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, because they do it in seasons.
Right. Maybe different writers would help. I don't know. Ferris number 14 by Vertigo by Willingham and Kitson. So this is a one-and-done story.
I thought it must be a one-and-done when I saw that Willingham was writing it.
Right.
Because he doesn't write the general.
Exactly. Renard Fox, this fox that can turn into a human, dates Princess Alder, who's a dryad. Now, is that a known character, Princess Alder?
I don't think we've seen her before, but I'm not positive.
Now, she's staying with the peeps, Bo and Peter Piper.
Right. And now, I don't think you read it, but there was a whole prose novel written about them.
Oh, okay.
That's the Willingham prose novel.
Ah.
And it was very, very good, and I highly recommend it.
So she's had a bad history with dating. She's very unlucky in love. At one point, she dates this guy, and he uses candles and accidentally sets her on fire. Another one brings flowers and...
Dead flowers.
And she's like, well, you know, those are...
Distant relatives. What are you doing?
What are you doing? And another one has concerns about splinters. So things have not gone well. Well, the date with Renard does not go well either. There's a whole sequence where they're setting things up, getting them nice clothes to wear and planning the date. Let's just say the date ends up involving excrement, and I'll leave it at that. And in the end, Geppetto offers to grow her a mate. So I don't know if that's going to be a tie-in to a upcoming storyline or just...
We have that whole thing going on with Geppetto and the Blue Fairy unknowingly courting each other.
Right.
So it could tie into that.
So I did enjoy that story. Time Warp from Vertigo. This is number one.
I just want to point out Vertigo is coming up with some pretty good things right now. So maybe our ringing the death knell for Vertigo was a little too soon.
Right. They just announced that Astro City as a title, we already knew that was coming back. That's going to be a Vertigo series, which I think makes a lot of sense. Putting it in the main DC line, even not as a New 52 title, didn't make a lot of sense. So Time Warp, I wasn't aware of this. Just like the other anthologies that have come out, this is based on an old DC title. Time Warp was a series in the late 70s and early 80s, a sci-fi anthology series that they put out.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen My Greatest Adventure, and we've seen Young Romance, and there was one that just came out recently. So it's an expensive title. I think it was like $7.99, but it's a very packed, a really good investment because you get several stories all at once.
Yes, it was $7.99.
And there are stories from David Lindelof and Lemire who tell this Rip Hunter time loop story.
I kind of like that one. It wasn't very long or involved, but right. It was good.
Now, these are all short stories. King and Fowler have this alien change history for what looks like the better, it turns out, but not for this woman who's involved. Simone, Gail Simone, and Bertram, they introduce this unique candy maker who can make you remember this one moment in your life by eating this candy he has. Kind of Twilight Zone-esque.
That really was, yes.
And Spurrier and Dowling show us the scientist pranksters. I very much enjoyed this story that they use science to kind of screw over the other guy and
yes.
make fun of the other guy. Lit and Buckingham spin a Dead Boy Detectives yarn.
I miss the Dead Boy Detectives.
And so apparently there's going to be a witching hour. It sounded like another anthology coming out, and that's going to be finished up in that anthology.
Or continued, maybe,
or
not
continued.
Finished up.
Right. Milligan and Perker, they have this really techie ghost story. It's ghost, but there's a technical background with it.
Yeah, that was weird. I don't think she was really a ghost.
Right. But it's essentially a ghost story.
But I think she was going to murder him.
Right. Fox and McDonald cover this very hard sci-fi story. There's a lot of references to the technology involved in this battle. Kent covers a future war story. And then finally, we have more time travel from Abnett and Colbard. And this particular story was interesting to me because I've envisioned a movie based on this concept, like a comedy. The idea of this story is group is assigned to make sure that time works the way it's supposed to, which you've seen in a lot of sci-fi. But in this case, they're assigned to one specific event, and they have to make sure that event happens. Because
no matter how horrible it is.
No matter how horrible it is, because people from other time periods keep coming back through time and trying to stop it, but they realize it has to happen that way.
Yes.
And so I've envisioned this idea of like a comedy movie about a guy who's assigned this task and just his life that he has to keep going back in time and stopping other people from killing this terrible character. The principal character.
Yes. Well, I liked how they referenced that these points in time start getting really thin from how often people come back, and they reference like Dallas and some other things. And those are all the points people say, oh, if you went back, would you?
What would you do? Well, yeah. Apparently once time travel exists, everybody starts doing that.
Doing those particular ones. And they were talking about, well, no wonder, you know, who knows where the shot came from and the grassy knoll and everything, because everybody keeps going back in time to try to change
it. And they keep having to fix things, and it's now to the point where nobody understands exactly what
yes.
happened.
Now I feel okay talking about the Dallas one, because that's not the one the story
right.
is about.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to ruin the story.
Right. And this also reminded me of a sci-fi short story about Shakespeare and how people kept going back in time to meeting him. This guy who thinks he's the first time traveler. And he goes back to see Shakespeare, but of course he's not technically the first, because other people from other time periods have come back to see Shakespeare by this point. And so Shakespeare has like a word processor now, and and he's met Jesus at one point, and
that sounds interesting. Maybe I'll have to look for it. Is it in one of your anthologies upstairs? Probably.
I think so.
We'll take a look.
All right. Before we get out of here, it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly?
Alrighty.
Oh, are you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
I forgot you actually have to guess. I thought that's all I had to do.
That was it.
Go.
TV related?
Yes.
One series?
Yes.
That has yet to start?
No.
So it's an existing series?
Yes.
On one of the four major networks?
Yes.
On CBS?
No.
On ABC?
Yes.
Is it a comedy?
No.
Is it a drama?
Yes.
Is it medical?
No.
Is it genre related?
Not really, no. No, it's not. I'm going to say no.
Is it crime related?
Only tangentially.
Okay. All right.
You wouldn't characterize it as a crime show.
Is it soap opera?
Well, yes.
But a lot of shows are soap opera.
Yes.
Let's see. Is it politically based?
Yes.
Is it Scandal?
It is Scandal.
So it's Kerry Washington on the cover.
Yes. And do you know who the guy is?
I wouldn't have any clue.
It's the president, but I don't know who plays him either. Yeah. So, Tony Goldwyn.
Oh, okay.
But you got Kerry Washington and Scandal, so that's pretty good.
Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including my Star Trek DS9 reviews. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.